You're on.
If everybody's ready, I'd like to call the work session to order.
Okay. I almost stood up and pledge.
Not yet. And it just so the public understands, I just want to reiterate the rules. The board will have a discussion. If you'd like to, after the board discussion, I'll look out to the audience. Remind me if I forget, if you have anything to add. Okay. The first item was incentive zoning, and I put that on the work session, and it's just been a few years since we've looked at our incentive zoning areas, and I just wanted to see interest from the board. If you look at the map over here, I've got the couple parcels that are still in it. One's already developed, and then the other one is still available. And the whole idea back then at that time was to eventually get sewers to Seneca Estates, which was, 50 years in the making, give or take. And then we have over on the peninsula, we have a few more properties that are the red diagonal lines. That's all in incentive zoning. And I just wanted to, touch base with the board or see, if anybody had any feelings on incentive zoning or maybe zoning in general, because I know besides developments, we really haven't updated zoning in the town. Right. And, incentive zoning was an overlay that was pretty much created with the TDR map. So
I'd like to get Jack's opinion and his expertise on this, because he knows more about like cluster and the codes and all that stuff than I do.
Aren't you glad you stayed, Jack?
Yeah.
I like a school's in session.
When we did the comprehensive land use plan update, obviously that was part of it. And the plan that you have adopted recognizes that the original development of incentive zoning overlays in Lysander by the 2015 group, the 2023 group agrees and supports with that, given the objectives that the club lays out with regard to the siting of incentive zoning. So from our perspective, and given what the goals and objectives were of the potential for incentive zoning for Lysander, we feel that, and it was our recommendation and you adopted it, that where we have the current overlays is the appropriate site for them. We did not address the issue of are there other areas where you might consider it. We did not look at that, because we feel there's ample incentive zoning acreage available in Lysander under the current code and club to handle any kind of development that in the foreseeable future. So from my perspective, from the club committee's perspective, we're comfortable with where we're at. And whether you ever use them, you may never use them. I mean, they're still, if they're in ag land, it's still ag land. If it's AR-40, somebody can come in and develop that under AR-40. If you just have to find a developer that's willing to work with the town to give the town what it needs to grant incentive zoning for the higher density. It has to get the right benefits and amenities. So I think the system is good from our perspective.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, because it's good to just refresh our, what we're thinking. And correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but even though we didn't say it in the code, one of the things we all realize is that if a development builds on an AR-40 configuration, that's a 1 acre lot, and they ask us to accept that road, we're buying something that's going to be a financial loser for the town. So one of the things that we can say is to the developer, if you want to build on 1 acre lots, just keep in mind it's not likely the town's going to accept that road. Now, is that just me thinking that way, or do we have a sense that that's how we all are? You follow what I'm saying?
I mean, I understand. And of course, I don't like adopting loans, as you know, and so that is my sense. And it does, in the old document at least, we just got this today, it did make an allusion to that. It didn't come right out and state that, but it did make an allusion to the fact that we are not in any way obligated to adopt the road.
But if a developer has AR-40 and wants to do, say, break it up, and it's not an incentive zoning, then that code is what, cluster codes that we can get something for that?
Cluster development.
So a cluster development, so there's a difference between cluster development and incentive zoning. So a cluster development allows you to go up one zoning classification. So all of our parcels that are covered in, all except for one, all of our parcels that are covered in the incentive zoning overlay are AR-40 parent parcels, so you can develop them as AR-40. So if a developer wanted to come in and do a cluster development, they could come in and request from the town board, so that it does take town board action to do that, the way our code is set up, to do a cluster development, which would allow them to develop at an R-20 designation, so 20,000 square foot lots, with the remaining acreage to be put in a conservation easement or not to be developed, to be green space. The, you know, that's a perfectly acceptable solution if a developer wants to come in and do that on a parcel that's got incentive zoning. The town board would be in a position to just accept it if they wanted to. With that being said, the town loses out on an opportunity to get an increase in benefits other than just 20,000 square foot lots on that parcel, whether it be funds for a new park or a trail or something else that you wouldn't necessarily get out of just doing a sewer extension or a traffic light or a road widening or an improvement that you wouldn't get with just a cluster development. So i.e. if a, like, this is a pretty good example, the Melbourne Farms project. Okay, we know that Hicks Road probably is going to need a turning lane in the future. We can say, hey, Hicks Road is going to need a right-hand turn lane and a straight and left-hand turn lane there, and it's going to need to be widened. We can say to that developer, even though his traffic impact study says no improvements are needed at this time, but you're going to have continued development pressure to the north with timber banks and the other incentive zoning parcels that are there, you can try to collect a fee to offset some of that cost, so when the time comes and the traffic lanes need to be built, there's fund money to fund it. And it doesn't all just fall back to the last developer in paying that whole bill. So there's disadvantages to the developer and the town to develop an IZ parcel as a cluster development.
So let me make sure I'm clear on that, and I'm going to use Collington Point as an example, because I'm not so sure, and maybe it's just the term you're using, and Jack and Al, just correct me, when you call it cluster, what we did in Collington is we said, we don't want you to build on 1 acre lots, but we'll let you build almost as many houses as you could have on the total acreage you had, which I think was 79 or 80, so on 20,000 square foot lots, half acre lots. So maybe we just have to avoid calling it cluster. I mean,
he didn't actually develop those as half acre. Those are all quarter to third acre lots.
Yeah, they're small. They're not one acre.
So he wouldn't have been able to develop that many lots in the area that he said that he is developing right now under a cluster.
I just want to make sure folks understand that in incentive zoning, we can get both. We can get higher density development, and we can also get additional benefits, like fix the sewer, fix the road, mm-hmm. like we did on for Collington. Whereas in a regularly, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but in a regularly zoned AR-40 that's not in incentive zoning, all we can do is cluster. We can't really ask for any financial benefit. We can say, we'll let you build as many houses, but do it on half your acreage, right?
Yep, correct. Okay.
But there's no, we can't, incentive zoning gives us the advantage of asking for more than just the higher density.
Yeah, we can take in what that area
But needs. We can ask for more. We could ask for sewers. We could ask for road improvements. We could ask for this. We could ask for that. But we can't do it in. So the incentive zoning is a. It's kind of nice to have that feature that we can tap if we want to.
There's a benefit to both the town and the developer with the incentive zoning. Right.
But I just want everybody to not forget that we don't really want to see developments, at least I'll speak for myself, that are on anything bigger than R20, because it's going to cost us in terms of the maintenance of those roads and infrastructure down the road.
Well, and we have that written in.
Do we?
Don't we currently?
Yeah, we do have that recommendation in the comprehensive plan.
All right, good. There you go.
That they have to show us a feasibility that what they're building is going to pay for itself. Yeah. And, on current costs.
Well, I was going to say, and that's in the comprehensive land use plan. It is not in the town code. When we get to the recommendations from the park committee, that is one of our recommendations, so that is memorialized in the town code subdivision and incentive zoning regulations.
Excellent.
So,
well, I'm pleased that we're kind of on the same page here, all of us. It's good.
And I just had a question, because you alluded to, parks or a trail or, widening the road. Is it under, because I wasn't on the planning board, so I don't know all this. Could the planning board look at a development and say, well, it'd be nice if you had a trail here? I mean, could they require the developer?
Our code does not specifically state that we can do that.
Okay.
With that being said, if we had a plan, we could force it on a developer. But right now, we don't have any truly adopted plan. Like, that's one of the things that the local waterfront redevelopment plan will help us do, that we can force those things on a developer. But right now, as it currently stands, I believe that a developer, if you tried to make a developer do something like that, they would be able to challenge you. You can say, we want you to set land aside for a trail and provide an easement. Yeah, but as far as actually building it, be hard pressed to get. I think you would be challenged. Do you agree, Tony?
Yeah.
I think you would be challenged.
I mean, basically, only if you're in a situation where the developer was going to gain something by agreeing to do that, would that be allowed. Mm-hmm. But if you force it on them at this point.
Or if they're doing a zone change from 40 to 20, we could force that.
Correct. One of the things we do recommend in the comprehensive land use plan is not allowing higher density zone changes unless it is an incentive zoning parcel where you're changing a parcel to incentive zoning. That is right in the club. Because the only thing that a zone change benefits, if you're doing a straight zone change, is it only benefits the developer, it doesn't benefit the town. That being the, the reasoning behind that. So I'm glad this, if you don't mind, this kind of plays into the Cold Spring Sewer study parcel density that I had on last. So maybe
we can go to that. That's
right,
fine.
Into that.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. So we've approved two incentive zoning projects. Both of those projects, one was just under two units per acre. One was just over two units per acre that was developed. We have the Melvin Farms proposal that's in, which. Actually, if you divide out the total acreage and the holding and the number of units, it's really just over 2 acres or 2 units per acre is what he's asking for. Just setting aside more open space to do that. With that being said, when you're doing a sewer study, you look at worst case scenario. Because the last thing you want to do is build something that's supposed to be in service for 100 years and end up with it too small or not having the capacity you need. So we were talking, or I was talking with our sanitary engineers about, hey, what kind of unit density do we want to target on these incentive zoning parcels to make sure that we're sizing this pump station that'll be on Melvin Farms and all the trunk sewers that'll need to be constructed adequately. So with that being said, we're currently, seems like our average is around 2 units per acre, which maybe good, maybe a little light. I think Melvin Farms is a bit of an anomaly because of how much acreage they have, where most of the other incentive zoning parcels are smaller. Some of the incentive zoning land, like this piece,
There's an issue with the graphics card, so I don't know if everything okay. works. Just so, you know.
So these two parcels are
That's
now in land trust.
Right. Where's
what's that?
Your
Yeah, these two parcels, so between the South Indian Park and Brick Walk, that field is now in a land trust, yep. a land conservation trust.
Chestnut. Yep.
Yeah, they're never gonna be developed. So that accurate acreage kind of falls out of the calculation. It really does. It's already got deed restrictions on it. It's just not going to be developed.
That whole parcel that goes to 370.
Yeah, that's
two,
all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that kind of falls out of the equation. My thought was okay. Let's look at this as a worst case scenario and assume that any AR-40 parcels would be developed as a cluster development. So still only one house per acre essentially. And anything that is incentive zoning, we could go 3 or 4 units per acre, just to make sure that last thing we want to do, like I said, if you're designing something that's going to last 100 years, you don't want to come up short in 70 years and have to replace it. But you don't want to oversize it too much either. So I just wanted to kind of get the board's thoughts on, do you agree with 3 units, 4 units per acre on the incentive zoning parcels that are left? We would obviously exclude out wetland areas and stuff like that when we work out the acreages. I think that's a reasonable approach, but, if the board's wants to see higher, wants to see lower, if you want to just say, hey, size it for 2 units per acre, and that's all we ever, or it's all we ever want to see developed. Well, you're certainly limiting development capacity by doing that without replacing sewers that are once they're already installed. So that's something I just want the board to think about, be cognizant of. My recommendation would be on the incentive zoning parcels, you look at a 4 units per acre density long term. If it comes up. If there's excess capacity, that's great. If there's not enough, well, it gets awful expensive to replace it after it's already.
And I'm sorry, let's say Melvin Farms got built with 20 apartments. What would, because you're dividing it among the whole acreage.
The whole acreage.
It's really not.
It's like 2.0, I think right now the way it's proposed is like 2.2 units per acre.
Okay.
Because of the overall holding.
Right, because of the area that will never be developed.
Correct.
So it
Correct.
Goes into the.
That goes into the equation.
That's
well,
not,
absolutely. Why would?
Well, because they're trying to figure out an area that they're covering.
Yeah, yeah.
And
how many,
you wouldn't
how
develop
much,
that area.
How much capacity we need
right.
for the long-term development plan?
So Al, 2.2 per acre. How many total units if we went up to 4 per acre? Well, how many total units are you talking about? For Melvin Farms, let's use that piece.
It would be about 1,000.
Thousand
a little over 1,000, yeah.
Right, well, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
So that, to me, there's a little more than sewer capacity to discuss we put 1,000 units over there.
I know, but that's from what I'm talking about here for what our goal is for sizing these sewers and designing the system long term,
that's
going to be in place for 100 years. Yes,
I understand.
So you don't want to. You certainly don't want to say every piece of incentive. You can, if that's the direction you give us, we'll say that every piece of incentive zoning land will be developed at 2 units per acre, and or right around there, and.
Well, I think it's.
I'm all about aesthetics. I got to see what it looks like on a map. Like, okay,
well,
do
absolutely, but that's not for this. You're not going to see this. This is underground. It's sewer. It's
yeah, but I want to see the 2 acre. I want to see the 2 units, 4 units on an acre and see what it looks like before.
Well, I mean, that's
that's tough.
It is. I can't.
Right, because you don't know. I mean, you got to remember, he's just trying to decide what's going down the road for the capacity that might be there.
100 years from now, basically.
Yeah. And I would guess 2 to 3 is probably closer to 2 than 3 because we really haven't. There's no directive of the board to go more.
Yeah.
The biggest thing we've got in front of us right now, and we're having a hard time handling it, is two.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're probably more like at the upper end of one going to two rather than above two.
So we can certainly do the model that way. I would say that you maybe that may bite the town long term. I would say that you plan for three at a minimum, and then.
Well, right, but you're talking about pump stations, size of piping.
Pump sewers, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm talking about big picture stuff.
So right. If you size it too big, what's the downfall to that?
There's none.
Other than we put a plan out there that says we're okay. Right.
I mean, the beauty of saying no more than two is that that's going to dictate how dense our community is developed. So I'm thinking like Kevin is thinking, you know, the upper reaches of one.
No, yeah, I agree with you as well, too. Yeah,
and you know what? And that's the town of Lysander. You don't like it, you know, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, so our history has been about 2 units per acre.
Mm-hmm.
That's a round fair number. If that's what you want us to use as a target density, we can do that. I mean, that seems.
I couldn't imagine the peninsula being at that, but or exceeding that, because I don't know how you move people off of it at that point.
Well,
unless they're flying, and maybe 50 years they are. You know.
And let's face it, some of the incentive zoning parcels, some of that acreage is in flowage easement, which
right
gets it subtracted out, and we would subtract that out. Some of it has state and federal wetlands on. We can subtract out that acreage. So there are constraints, I guess. But
yeah,
I'll do whatever you guys want me to do. I would recommend using a density of 3 or 4 units per acre, so you don't end up in a situation where 50 years from now people are saying, why did they ever do that? And it's not going to hurt anybody from a sanitary sewer standpoint to do that.
The answer to that question would be because we don't want 4 units per acre.
Yeah.
That would be, I'm trying to think long term too. I don't know that we want 4 units per acre. And if this is one way to help mitigate that or limit that, then let's do it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm going to guess this study's probably going to come back telling us there's significant infrastructure changes from the county on how they process sewage to be able to get to the two number.
So what they need is to do for the Baldwinsville Seneca Knoll. What the county needs to do for the Baldwinsville Seneca Knoll's treatment plant is a study to get the DEC to allow them to have a design load increase. So from an actual plant capacity itself, that plant functions very, very well. As it is at its current size, and it has plenty of capacity currently. However, the way the design report for the plant is written.
Another upgrade to it?
No, it's not an upgrade. Okay. It's literally a study to show that the way the plant currently functions, the design load estimate when the plant was designed was ultra conservative, and it actually has much more capacity than what the design report and permit says it has. Because this is a Baldwinsville Seneca Knoll's plant is a twin of the Oak Orchard plant. I don't know if you remember, but about 10 years ago, maybe 11 now, the county said, nope, we're not going to allow any new connections to the Oak Orchard treatment plant because it is at design capacity.
Where's that one located?
That's the Wetzel Road plant.
Okay.
And in the end, through some political pressure, the county did a study, or paid a consultant to do a study, and got the design load of the Wetzel Road Oak Orchard treatment plant expanded, and then they lift that moratorium and allowed new connections to the, but they didn't do any physical changes to the plant. It was purely a study of how the plant functions and what the actual capacity of that plant was from a theoretical design standpoint.
Okay.
Well, so, I think you're hearing two, Al. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm good with two.
I like six, but I'm just not. That's
fine. If that's the number you want us to use, we'll
one. How about nine?
We'll use two.
Yeah. Well, thank you. The other item on there was just I have a question. I have two. Hold on. Fred first?
Go ahead. Liz can go first.
Okay, Liz? Okay.
Well, I guess I would want to say, you know, the difference between two and three is, I guess, what economists call a committed device. Because if you go with two, you've basically committed for all those years in the future. Mm-hmm. And so, I guess, you know, if you want a future that we won't see, that Lysander retains its character, it is the ultimate commitment device. I actually am not overly concerned about 100 years from now, but next week more. But I guess, I have your zoning map up, and I think about the sewer and the development, and you mentioned the flowage easement and how it limits the development. So, you know, in the code, this flowage easement is incredibly strict about what can be done and what can't in that area. And it's not clear, the way the flowage easement runs in the blue is such as then an overlay, because you see these interruptions of ones that are neighborhood residential district and then the yellow residential. And so are they on top? Does the flowage easement interrupt? Because water doesn't really work that way. Or is that blue flowage, maybe I'll just get it.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
So the blue flowage easement is actually determined by the New York State Canal Corporation flowage easement line.
Yeah.
So we put in an additional protection overlay above and beyond what the Canal Corporation has already said they can flood at any time, even without weather events. So if they need to release water rapidly from Seneca Lake to lower Seneca Lake to protect something, even if there's not a weather event, they can flood to that elevation, essentially. So we put in additional protections so that doesn't get missed for any new projects coming in, so that we're not putting properties at risk in the future.
So does the flow easement, for example, run around for this? Does it affect their ability to develop that property or rebuild?
Yeah. It's a touch screen. It's okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And like I said, I got a graphics monitor issue. I'm getting there.
Okay, there we go. Okay, not touching anything.
Down a little.
Go up to the, so you can see the island, Klein Island. There we go. Right, so this blue is actually over, you know, we're showing the thing there, and that runs over this.
Yep.
Right, so new structures should not be built.
Correct.
Anywhere on there.
Correct.
And that is enforced by the town.
And enforced by the town and the Canal Corporation.
Okay.
Well, new structures can be built.
But they can't increase the footprint.
Right, but that's a new, like a new structure. So, not so hypothetically, someone who built a big stage on a flowage easement should not have been allowed to do that. I guess that's my understanding. And we protect.
Now, could it be on right? Now, could it be on stilts? Could it be above? I mean, for their own personal.
By the way, our code reads, you probably could not.
Okay.
Classify it as a temporary structure, potentially. Our code is pretty strict.
Right. But if you're taking a footprint that is there currently.
Yes. I don't know if the stage is actually in the flow easement, because both of those parcels where the pink neighborhood business.
Right. So I guess then that was my question is, this is the blue overlay. So you have, you're showing the neighborhood residential district and the light.
No, this shading is not the river.
I thought that was a river.
So people understand.
That's not overlay.
So does that really interrupt and the flow easement doesn't count in that pink area, or is it actually really running over the pink area?
It is not run. Our overlay does not run over the pink area.
Okay. So that
our overlay.
That makes a big difference. Yes, and I misunderstood.
Yes. Our overlay does not run over the pink area.
Okay.
The flowage easement line of the Canal Corporation may run over that. However, our overlay does not run over that.
Right, but the water is actually going to stop around the pink one.
So not at all. No.
Okay.
No, and our flood damage prevention law does have.
But the canal would have to, because it protects the liability, right? Because
correct.
They're flooding. Okay, thank you.
Fred?
Maybe when they build that walkway down around there, they can put a drain to get that water out of there.
Right.
Fred Birch, Plainville Road. The first thing I want to say is I appreciate all the input that we have the opportunity to hear. I mean, that's why we come down here, to get more information. And sometimes it may sound like we're critical or whatever, but I mean, we're just responding to what we hear at the time. But I appreciate all the information that we get. First thing I wanted to say, regarding Al's comments about developers and their timing of when they come in, about the last guy in paying more of a price or an incentive than the first developers were there. And the analogy I'd like to make is, if you haven't yourself, you've heard of people buying stock in companies. It's an investment, just like if you invested in real estate. You hope the market's going to go good and you're going to profit from it. When you buy stock, is that a guarantee? Do you get a piece of paper that says you're going to get a guaranteed return? I'm not talking about Ponzi schemes. Why would a real estate investment be any different than a stock investment or a business investment? Do you see stock investors come along and say, hey, I want to get that price on that Apple stock that guy paid 15 years ago. I don't want to pay 8 times the price. Nobody would do that. So it's about timing. If somebody comes in 15, 20, 30 years ago and develops, they took that opportunity and they get that dividend of acting first, just like an investor in stock would get. So if we're already close to maxed out and it takes forever to get out on the roads, like Gene when he leaves his house, and we allow more building to take place, the person that comes in at the end of it, why wouldn't they be expected to pay more than the people that took the opportunity way in the beginning? And if, say, 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, we had had some of the rules that you're talking about implementing now. Say we had a rule of 2 parcels per acre on Dingle Hole Road. Who would go there and build a house? Nobody. Had we had these rules 40 years ago in Lysander, we wouldn't have the development we have now.
When you look at this map, and I know there's beautiful homes in here. I've been to Jeff's house before. He's got a beautiful, his neighbor's homes, they're beautiful. I would love to have a home like that. But look at the way this looks. Is that what we want here and here and here and here and here? I say, why don't we just sell from here over to Salina and Bayberry can come all the way over here? Have any of you ever been to Lysander Preserve? It's where the Glen used to be, top of Mercer Street. These houses are 2.5 times the size of the houses that I grew up on that same street, Mercer Street. And the lawns are half the size. It doesn't look right when you drive in that development. Jeff, imagine the homes in your development being 15 feet apart instead of the 50 or 60 that they are now.
I lived in the South. I know how it is. There's some houses that you can't even fit a lawnmower through.
I'm asking, is that what we want for Lysander?
You can't build that with our code. There's got to be a certain distance between houses.
Right. So. But the point you have is different for every person. People moving to Lysander are okay with that. They buy that house maybe 10, 20 years down the road. They buy a house further out in the country.
At this time now.
So, the developer's taking the risk of what they can develop on, and some people will buy a lot and a half or 2 lots, and they go and move lot lines. Every project that starts 20 years ago never ends up the way it looked. If you put a map up there of a proposal when they got approval and where it ended up, 9 times out of 10, it's different.
Sure, and a good example is like what Al was talking about, life expectancy with Whispering Oaks. We saw it. That system failed in like a third of the time that it was estimated for. And then we saw all the ramifications that came of that. When don't want to harp on.
But that's, but there is a point of allowing a developer to build a development and say, well, I'm going to put a septic system in instead of making them run sewer to it. And that's the long-term ramifications when that happens. Now, all of a sudden, we have 40 or 50 homes that have to pay $1 million to have sewer lines ran there. So incentive zoning gives you the opportunity to get every guy between there and there to pay a part of that to get that
project. I'll just say this, Fred. I was exactly thinking how you thought until I read an article Al sent me today. Identical. Until Al sent me this article, I'll print it off and give it to you next time, and it'll change your mind.
Well, I'll read it. I don't know that it'll change my mind, but I'll take the time to read it.
Yeah.
You know, we're all aware of the existing problem with traffic, and additional development, you can all hope that it's not going to cause more problems, but we all know that it will. So I'm from the standpoint of, hey, if that's what this town wants to do, let's alleviate some of that problem before we go and develop. Let's build some of those turn, left and right turn areas into the developments before we go ahead and build the development, not 10 years after we started developing houses in there. And, you know, as a young kid, I can remember leaving the village of Baldwinsville and going to 481 in Clay.
Right.
And on that trip, I went through one light, only one light. And if you go through that area now, there's 8 lights. And so it's fundamentally changed
right.
our community. And is it for the best? You know, I'm not sure. And as far as, like you were talking about the zoning and whether we're going to get money out of doing that, we're already plowing all these roads as it is. These country roads like Patchett Road and Church Road. And so if we put a house on R40 on a road that we're already going past and plowing, it's going to be more income coming in than, okay, I understand right. you want to put a cul-de-sac in and wrap 30 houses around.
But that's where the cul-de-sac has to pay for itself. The planning board looks at that and looks at the feasibility.
I understand that. Why can't the developer invest in that, in the road, in the turning, and in the drainage?
But that's what we're trying to do with incentive zoning, is everybody pays into that because, you know, state tells you once you get to 500 cars, you need a traffic light. Well, you watch developers spot build out to 480 because nobody wants to be the guy that has to build 500. And that's where, to me, that's where incentive zoning helps you, because everybody knows traffic's an issue. And someone will come up at a public hearing and say, well, it'd be nice to have a traffic light there. So we sit there and say, well, a traffic light's $500,000. So if we get 2 or 3 developers or a developer that wants to do something to pay for the traffic light, it solves a problem. I'm not saying it doesn't create other problems, right. but okay.
I appreciate that. And I appreciate ask you yep. if you guys have some time in the near future.
Yep.
You go to the Dome or something on your way back, rather than go 690, drive Old Liverpool Road and drive through Bayberry.
Right.
And see what it's like there. And that's going to happen here. If we keep on going that direction, it's going to happen here in our lifetimes.
Right. Thank you. Cedric?
And you keep developing these farmlands, which have been farmed for well over 200 years. You keep developing them, like he said, you're going to have to put turn lanes in. Where's that land coming? I'll tell you where it's coming from. Some of us homeowners. It's going to be eminent domain. You're going to take it away.
Right.
To put those lanes in, especially Hicks Road and Hayes Road. You know how close those houses are.
I mean, there's houses built into the right-of-way on Hayes Road right now.
Yes.
There is...
The 25-foot
easement,
yeah.
I know at least a half a dozen that have front porches that have extended into the county right-of-way.
And the other thing I did, maybe I'm touching off a little bit, but I understand development's coming. What I don't want to see is 3-story apartments on a nice piece of farmland that was been farmed for 20 years. It still could be farmed, but they won't let them.
Right.
And that's beautiful land there. Trust me, I've seen good crops come off that. Not fair, good.
Right. And that, you know, and that goes back to our incentive zoning TDR being over, you know, it, you look back and unfortunately everybody talks about good soil. I don't know if that was ever taken into consideration when the map was drawn, but we also didn't decide where the state roads were in the town of Lysander.
And you put these sewers in, what about the rest of us? Can we tie into them? We still get a sewer tax, even though we have septics.
Right.
We have a small little sewer.
The county, the your...
Water.
Right.
Yes, water.
It says sewer on my bill. I don't know about yours.
I think the... There's either a county water fee or a county
water,
sewer.
It's a water fee. Right. Yeah, it's a water fee.
So, yes. I understand. It's a county issue. So, but it's an issue nonetheless. Yeah.
Yeah, but if sewers are brought there, then absolutely everyone could tap into it if they're right there.
Yeah, I mean, if the sewer line goes by, you'll have the opportunity. Right.
The goal is to, with this Cold Spring sewer study, is to figure out a way to get sewer to every homeowner on the Cold Spring Peninsula.
I'm saying, if you put that bigger line in, that's what's going to tell the developer, hey, I got a good line here, now I can throw up 2-3-story apartments. Do we really need these apartments here?
Yep. Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Mrs. Rode.
I lived in Sterling, New York for 12 years, and while I was there, they put in sewers. It took them years to do, but the bottom line was they did it in like 6 or 7 phases. They were forced to do it. The DEC either charged them $1 million fine because some of the septics were leaking into Little Soda Spring. So they had to go with sewers. In that time, they had to install grinder pumps. If you're not familiar with them, you can have a gravity flow sewer. We didn't have to pay for the grinder pumps as long as you put it in when they came through. But if you chose not to put it in, then you had to pay for that grinder pump later, which was $5,000. We paid a quarterly operation and maintenance fee, and we paid for the bonding of it. And by when we got done, I was paying $900 a year for the sewer to come through. Just to give you an idea on the cost, I paid $150 every quarter for maintenance and $300 for the bond on my property taxes that came in January. So it was I paid $900 a year to get on the sewers. The problem we had with it was we wanted to keep the septic tanks for gray water. And they wouldn't allow it. They made everything go to the sewers. We either had to crush the tank or fill it in. So you do have other issues that come up when you go through with a sewer line.
Right.
I just wanted to...
Your $900, that did not include your personal connection to the sewer, right? That was just...
No. Right? We had to pay to have the house hooked up to the actual sewer line.
But that's...
Well, to the grinder pump.
That's right? Still cheap compared to getting a new septic
and
now.
It only cost us... I'm trying to think what we paid to hook up to the line. It wasn't a lot. It was only like a couple $100 to go from the house to the actual grinder pump line.
Yeah.
So, but it's a cost. I mean... Is it worth it? We thought so, and especially being near, and if you're going to be near a body of water, it's definitely worth it because you're not going to be polluting that water.
Right.
So I'm familiar with that project in Soda Spring. There was an enormous amount of grant funding that got that number down
to
$900 a year.
Right.
So with that being said, that's the point of doing the sewer study. Once you do the sewer study, you have the tool to go after that grant funding.
Yeah.
Right.
That is the reasoning behind doing the sewer study, is to help the existing residents in the town of Lysander that are on the Cold Springs Peninsula in really what's marginal soils for septic systems, marginal at best.
And I will be in that sewer district, correct? On River Road?
Well, you're in the study.
Yes, you're in the study area, yes.
Oh, okay.
The sewer would all depend on when the line comes by.
Correct.
When things get developed enough or the line comes by. And the other thing with Fairhaven, you didn't have a lot of units going into the district. You know, you're in a rural area.
Well,
you know, you got to remember the units that aren't on sewer now, that as that line goes by would be able to have the opportunity to hook up. I'm not saying it wouldn't be $900, but when you only have 150 houses across 3 miles and you got to go around a bay, you add a lot of pipe.
We pay by EDU. You're not going to do it by water use.
No, by equivalent dwelling unit.
Okay.
Right.
That's how we've always done it in the past. Some,
okay. Well, they argued whether to do water usage, but because we have seasonal people, because of the vacation.
It makes much more sense to do it by equivalent dwelling unit.
EDU. Right. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the next items was union proposals. We have two unions. We have the clerical union at Town Hall, and we have the highway union. Both of them, their contracts ended on December 31st. So over the next few meetings, you'll probably see us go into executive session to discuss negotiations and the contracts. So I'm just letting people know. Normally, we won't have any motions after. It's just for us to look over what they're asking for and what we would like in return. The next item was MS4 permit requirements.
So I've got a little spreadsheet here that I put together, and I'll send you guys a link to the new permit so you can kind of cross-reference this, but it references all the new stuff that we have to do in the next few years related to the new MS4 permit that
is
effective. Municipal separated storm sewer system.
Oh, okay, this is the catch basin stuff.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'll send you a link to the actual permit itself so you can cross-reference this. We do have a bit of work that we have to do this year to be in compliance. We will have to file the NOI, which is a notice of intent, to make the permit active for us by the 20th, or we'll get a fine.
The 20th of
February. So
okay.
I started filling that out now. We'll put a resolution on the next agenda authorizing Kevin to sign it, and we'll submit it. So we're in compliance, but some of the stuff we can certainly use. Like we'll have CHA, we'll have another intern coming on. Some of the stuff we can do with through an intern program to keep the town's costs down. You know, it's just another mandate. It's another mandate that comes from the feds, gets passed down through the states, and ultimately ends up in the local municipalities.
With no money attached.
With no money.
Great.
You know, the funding mechanism of it, I'll try to quantify what the total number of hours is going to be and give you a proposal on what I think it'll be to get us into compliance for this coming year. This is all new, so we're doing this for several other clients as well, and we're trying to find out the most cost-effective way for all of our clients to do this. So more to come on that. I don't have a firm grasp about what it's a work in progress. So in the next couple of months, we'll give you a proposal of what we think it will cost and ways that we can keep your costs down, whether it be using interns or assistance from the codes office or things like that. So we'll keep you posted more to come. But I just wanted everybody to kind of be aware of where we're at and what. I mean, you got 3 pages of stuff that you got to do here basically in the next 5 years. So there's some legwork.
Okay. Thank you, Al. I always appreciate more work.
Sorry.
So I should thank our federal government for that. That concludes our work session at 6:20. We've got 10 minutes or so before we start the long meeting.